Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I will begin with your reading this morning. This is Choose to Bless the World by Rebecca Parker. Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of the hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting. Any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice to offer love. And any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question. What will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of love and more than an act of will. It's a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, anesthetization of or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting, that which is sacred will not be defiled. Those who bless the world live their life as a gesture of thanks for this beauty and this rage. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude to search for the sources of power and grace, native wisdom, healing, and liberation. More, the choice will draw you into community. The endeavor shared, the heritage passed on, the companionship of struggle, the importance of keeping faith, the life of ritual and praise, the comfort of human friendship, the company of earth, the chorus of life welcoming you. None of us alone can save the world. Together, that is another possibility waiting. Thank you so much for having me this morning. I am so happy to be here, sharing my fierce love, which is poetry. And people often say to me, well, you say that a lot, fierce love. What does that mean? What do you mean by that? And we all have our definitions of fierce love, I'm sure. Mine relates to Dostoevsky and his words, love in action is a harsh and dreadful thing compared to love in dreams. I love poetry because it takes us so quickly from the head to the heart. And I hope that's what we can do together this morning. That I can read some poetry and you can relax into yourself Take the words into your heart and be with them. Two of my favorite justice poets are William Stafford, who you may know as the poet laureate, the original poet laureate, and ours, certainly Oregon's poet laureate, for a long time before his death at 79. Are we having trouble?
When you look that way, we can't hear you.
Oh, can we move this a little bit? How about if this, we do it this way? Is that better?
Yes.
If you can't hear me, if you're having trouble, just put up your hand and we'll do something to fix that. So we're going to talk this morning. I'm going to share with you some of what I know about hope and activism in a couple of different ways. Stafford, of course, we know, was a conscientious objector. He was a lifelong conscientious objector and a pacifist. Wendell Berry, whom you may also be familiar with, is a farmer. He was born in 1934, and he in Kentucky, where he is now returned to live out the end of his life, working the very land that he loves the best. So here's some excerpts from Berry's The Art of the Commonplace. This is called The Agrarian Essays. And here are some words from that. The care of the earth is our most ancient and most worthy, and after all, our most pleasing responsibility. To cherish what remains of it and to foster its renewal is our only legitimate hope. And a few special words from Stafford, excerpted from a long poem, long narrative poem called Muttered Creed, which he wrote during his CO camp years. Never again for any glorious thing stand in unison or repeat after a leader. Call out friendliness, knock on wood, greet the enemy. Fall facing homeward and calling out clearly, forgive. Linda, can you tell me the time frame? When do we need to be done?
11:30.
11:30.
15:20.
Okay. All right. I'm going to start then with a poem on hope by Wendell Berry. And I'm not going to say a lot in between. I'm just going to read poem upon poem and let you absorb them. A poem on hope. It is hard to have hope. It is harder as you grow old, for hope must not depend on feeling good. And there's the dream of loneliness at absolute midnight. You also have withdrawn belief in the present reality of the future, which surely will surprise us. And hope is harder when it cannot come by prediction any more than by wishing. But stop dithering. The young ask the old to hope. What will you tell them? Tell them at least what you say to yourself. Because we have not made our lives to fit our places, the forests are ruined, the fields eroded, the streams polluted, the mountains overturned. Hope then to belong to your place by your own knowledge of what it is that no other place is, and by your caring for it as you care for no other place. This knowledge cannot be taken from you by power or by wealth. If you stop your ears to the powerful when they ask for your faith, and to the wealthy when they ask for your land and your work, be still and listen to the voices that belong to the stream banks and the trees and the open fields. Find your hope then on the ground under your feet. Your hope of heaven, let it rest on the ground underfoot. The world is no better than its places. Its places at last are no better than the people, while their people continue in them. When the people make dark the light within them, the whole world darkens. Wendell Berry has a reputation, as does Stafford, for being quite gentle in their approach to the world and its travails. Berry wants to give you a warning here. This is called Warning to My Readers, in preparation for what's to come. Do not think me gentle because I speak in praise of gentleness, or elegant because I honor the grace that keeps this world. I am a man crude as any, gross of speech, intolerant, stubborn, angry, full of fits and furies. That I may have spoken well at times is not natural. A wonder is what it is. All right. I'm going to read it. Another Berry, his manifesto. This is where you'll see the cynicism of this man and the deep hope that he carries always. Manifesto, the Mad Farmer's Liberation Front. Love the quick profit, the annual raise, vacation with pay. Want more of everything ready-made. Be afraid to know your neighbors and to die. And you will have a window in your head. Not even your future will be a mystery anymore. Your mind will be punched in a card and shut away in a little drawer. When they want you to buy something, they will call you. When they want you to die for profit, they will let you know. So friends, every day, do something that won't compute. Love the Lord. Love the world. Work for nothing. Take all that you have and be poor. Love someone who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all you cannot understand. Praise ignorance, for what man has not encountered, he has not destroyed. Ask the questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant and you will not live to harvest. As soon as the generals and the politicos can predict the motions of your mind, lose it. Leave it as a sign to mark the false trail, the way you didn't go. Be like the fox who makes more tracks than necessary, some in the wrong direction. Practice resurrection. All right, let's talk a little bit about enemies. Enemies by Wendell Berry. This is going to begin a series of rather intense poems, which we will follow with a few moments of silence and reflective music. You'll know when it's time for that. Enemies by William Berry, by Wendell Berry. If you are not to become a monster, you must care what they think. If you care what they think, how will you not hate them and so become a monster of the opposite kind? From where then is love to come? Love for your enemy, that is the way of liberty. From forgiveness. Forgiven, they go free of you, and you of them. They are to you as sunlight on a green branch. You must not think of them again, except as monsters like yourself, pitiable because unforgiving. From William Stafford, For the Unknown Enemy. This monument is for the unknown good in our enemies. Like a picture, their life began to appear. They gathered at home in the evening and sang. Above their fields, they saw a new sky. A holiday came, and they carried the baby to the park for a party. Sunlight surrounded them. Here we glimpse what our minds long turned away from. The great mutual blindness darkened that sunlight in the park, and the sky that was new, and the holidays. This monument says that one afternoon we stood here letting a part of our minds escape. They came back, but different. Enemy, one day we glimpsed your life. This monument is for you. In response to that poem, I wrote this one titled Morning at the Edge of a City. In her kitchen, the woman moves silently. She is making soup, accompanied only by her prayers. It's been 2 weeks since they took her husband. Steam rises from the battered pot, exploding a tangled fragrance of cabbage and onions. She quells the turbulent broth by dropping orange discs of carrot through her fingers like prayer beads that have become unstrung. Before dawn, she rose and picked her way carefully toward the place where the garden had been, wondering if there might be sun today to lighten the heavy air. She found much of the garden's bounty still safe beneath chunks of ash. Back home now, the sun rises and makes its way through a broken kitchen window. Since last night, there has been no sound, no guns or screams to disturb the silence of what is unspeakable. William Stafford, entering history. Remember the line in the sand? You were there on the telly, part of the military. You didn't want to give it, but they took your money for those lethal tanks and the bombs. Minorities, they don't have a country, even if they vote. Thanks anyway, the majority says, and you are left there, staring at the sand and the line they drew, calling it a challenge, calling it ours. Where was your money when the tanks grumbled past? Which bombs did you buy for the death rain that fell? Which year's taxes put that fire to the town where the screaming began? And I couldn't help but write this one. Where was I when we voted to drop the bombs, to starve the children, to burn the village? Was it one of those years I was preoccupied with getting my taxes paid on time or baking cupcakes so my children's school could have money for art supplies? Or did it happen even longer ago on a Sunday morning while my family sang Onward, Christian Soldiers? Was it one of those decades when talking politics or religion made for bad taste at the dinner table? And discussions about spending less for what we called defense and more for education were not on the menu. Remember that bulldozer that leveled Rachel Corrie as she stood with her brave hair blowing about her face? Was that bulldozer fueled by my apathy? And in Gaza, on that sunniest of afternoons, when a gentle boy the same age as my grandson sat quietly on a riverbank, was it my silence that bought the bullets that killed him? Where was I when the screaming began? And now, Questionnaire by Wendell Berry. How much poison are you willing to eat for the success of the free market and global trade? Please name your preferred poisons. For the sake of goodness, how much evil are you willing to do? Fill in the following blanks with the names of your favorite evils and acts of hatred. What sacrifices are you prepared to make for culture and civilization? Please list the monuments, shrines, and works of art you would most willingly destroy. In the name of patriotism and the flag, how much of our beloved land are you willing to desecrate? List in the following spaces the mountains, rivers, towns, farms that you would most readily do without. State briefly the ideas, ideals, or hopes, the energy sources, the kinds of security for which you would kill a child. Name, please, the children whom you would be willing to kill. Thank you. All right. Let's go back and find some of that gentleness. From William Stafford, Allegiances. It is time for all the heroes to go home, if they have any. Time for all of us common ones to locate ourselves by the real things we live by. Far to the north, or indeed in any direction, strange mountains and creatures have always lurked. Elves, goblins, trolls, spiders. We encounter them in dread and wonder. But once we have tasted far streams, touched the gold, found some limit beyond the waterfall, a season changes and we come back changed, but safe, quiet, grateful. Suppose an insane wind holds all the hills while strange beliefs whine at the traveler's ears. We ordinary beings can cling to the earth and love where we are, sturdy for common things. And we can't let you leave without Wendell Berry's Peace of Wild Things. When despair grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water. And the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting for their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. May we all rest in the grace of the world and be free. Thank you. Thank you so much.